Don't you love technical difficulties? The 2011-2012 state legislative session, which ended mid-March, will go down in history as one to remember. There was the fight over collective bargaining changes for public employees and the ensuing protests, which garnered national media attention. There was the passage of concealed carry legislation after many years of trying. There was a fight over the state budget, which divided the state house. But even towards the end of the legislative session, there was still hot-button issues like iron mining, abortion regulations, abstinence-only education, even a state wolf hunt. This hour, we'll be joined by two state lawmakers from western Wisconsin who will explain how it all went down and why. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side Legislative Roundup. I'm joined in studio by freshman state representative Kathy Bernier. She's a Republican from Chippewa Falls, and state representative Chris Dano, a Democrat from Trempealeau. Representatives Bernier and Dano, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And listeners, here is your chance to talk to a couple of your local lawmakers directly. So take that opportunity and call in this hour to the West Side. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Or you can leave a comment or a question on our West Side Facebook page. So we're going to get into the discussion now, and we'll get down to brass tacks. Representative Bernier, this was your first year as a state legislature or a state legislator. Was it a baptism by fire?
Well, that's an understatement, Rich. It was a baptism by fire. It was all that I expected and then some. I think a lot of us think back. We could have done things differently. Even the governor, I think, understands that he could have done things a little bit differently. But, you know, you kind of take things as they come, and that's what we did.
Sure. Wishing things would have been done differently. Any specifics?
Well, I had ideas that I shared with folks in regard to stepping the changes into the salary decreases as far as the insurance and the retirement plan.
Kind of easing,
with a budget amendment. We could have probably done a portion of that, and then 6 months later, or when we were doing the new budget, then finish up with the next portion.
Sure, same results, but stepped a little bit.
There was, and you're right, Rich. The results would have been the same, but it would have been probably a little more gentle.
Gotcha. And just tell me a little bit about just the learning curve of getting into state politics. I mean, I know you've been in local politics for quite a while, but or local office anyway. What was that like, getting to become one of the 99?
Well, you kind of ebb and flow with it. Fortunately, I did have a lot of experience and background with county government, and I was the legislative representative for the election committee and the legislative committee for the county clerks, Wisconsin County Clerks Association. So I did have some experience on legislative issues and how that, a bill becomes law, and how to watch the legislation as it goes through the process. But this is, it's different when you're in the middle. It's much more difficult,
I suppose. Now, I'll ask both of you this question, but I'll start with you now, Representative Chris Dano. What do you think the legislature got right during the 2011-2012 session, and what did they get wrong? If you could sum it up in... If you could sum it up in 60 seconds or less.
For me, I think we got an awful lot wrong and not a lot right, quite frankly. I think if you go back to the beginning of the session, particularly with Act 10, which is the change in collective bargaining and all that for public employees, the vast majority of public employees in the state, I think, right out of the box, I think that was, a huge mistake in the sense that it wasn't necessary if you're talking about asking public employees to contribute more as far as what they're paying into their pensions and retirement benefits and health care. You don't need to strip them of their collective bargaining rights at the same time you do that. You sit down and you talk with them and you work out a solution. I think for me that was the most – I think of the things we did wrong it was this idea, and I think the governor came in thinking that he was granted essentially a mandate because that the Republicans controlled the both legislative branches, the Senate, right. the Assembly, and the gubernatorial.
There was a sweep.
There was, but I think the mandate was overread, quite frankly. It was more of a frustration with the status quo. I don't think people wanted, and I think that's why you saw the pushback, is people didn't want the kind of radical changes that the governor was talking about. You know, we made the largest cuts in history to public education in the state, in the history of the state. And this is a state, and I know from talking to people, that values its schools. We do. I mean, Wisconsin has historically been, has literally some of the best schools in the country. If you look at the test scores and the graduation rates and things like that. You know, obviously there are certain parts of the state that have different problems, like some of the urban schools are troubled. Mm-hmm. But overall, we have very, very, very good schools. And people didn't want to see the kinds of cuts coming. And I think that that's really where we really went to. I think they essentially went too far. And what I think what was so frustrating was I told the governor after I met him after the State of the State address, I was out at the governor's mansion. I went out there. Wanted to chat with him, have a chance, and say, look. And I told him, I said, Governor, I think if you're willing to govern the state from the center, and arguably you're going to govern the state from the center right, but if you govern the state from the center like Tommy Thompson does, I said, you know what, I'll have my disagreements with you, but I'll be willing to try and work with you. And if you try and govern the state from the center and don't pursue a radical agenda, I think you'll be governor as long as you want to be, like Tommy was. He was set up to do that if he would have approached it with a little bit more modesty. And I think that's my biggest disappointment. I think towards the end of the session, we did start to see a little bit of improvement in the tone. I think partly that was because people had a chance to get to know each other. I've said that in other forums, and I think that helps.
That went with both sides.
I think that's a big part of it.
Now, Representative Bernier, as far as collective bargaining, do you think that, you know, there's a lot of talk from the Democratic side or the folks that are sympathize with the public employee unions that they would have got the concessions either way. But do you believe that?
No. And that's easy to say. That's, you know, they would have. But you have to realize that you have hundreds of local unions. Towns, cities, villages, counties, in addition to the state unions, you would have had to get every single one to sit down and address their contract differences and get everyone to sign on the dotted line. And there were some, I don't think were ready to do that. They were still willing to fight even over the money. So I don't think that would have been possible. The only way to handle that, and I agree with the governor, it's why I voted yes, I guess, is that in order to do that statewide all at one time, so it wasn't going to take, you know, 5 years to get it done, was to dismantle the collective bargaining portion of the union contracts.
And there's some talk out there, at least in some circles, that this was, you know, union busting, that this was more about kind of crippling a funding source for the Democratic Party. Do you believe that that's part of it, Representative Bernier?
No, and it seems pretty obvious that they're still there, you know, contributing for the cause currently. You know, I come from local government, and I was on the village board, and I can tell you that I looked back at some of those contracts, and I thought, oh my gosh, who would have agreed to this stipulation or this requirement in a collective bargaining agreement? And the same thing holds true at the county level. You know, there were some problems with overtime and a number of other things. This gives everyone an opportunity to roll things back and to say, you know, let's start over. The other thing, too, is having been a representative in the village board, having been involved in county government, the boards do not want to treat their employees poorly. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a great deal of respect for the government employees, and I do. And I think that there were a lot of union employees in the county. There were a lot of non-union employees in the county. And they were all treated with respect and as fairly as possible. And whether you have a union there or not, doesn't mean that they're going to be treated with any less respect, I don't think.
And Representative Dano, there have been examples that seem egregious, like the prison, you know, double overtime example, et cetera. Any
thoughts?
Well,
you know, I have to strongly disagree with my colleague. If you look at what the governor was doing, it was clear. I mean, this is a chance, and a lot of other Republicans viewed it as a chance to go after unions, and they had their shot, they took it. And if you look around the country, that's what was going on. Look at what happened in Ohio. Look at what happened in Indiana. Indiana became a right-to-work state now. You know, and just so people understand, I come out of the union movement. I was the president of my local. And again, you know what? The vast majority of employers treat their employees well. But you know what? I was in a situation, and I can tell, you know, and I talked about this during the debate. I dealt with a former the guy who was who ran our department, who broke the law several times. We had a city government that was supporting him in what was basically illegal activities, unethical activities. And the only reason he was held to account was because I was able to stand together with my union brothers and sisters in the police department that I worked for. Otherwise, I guarantee you, he would have been able to fire a whole bunch of us because we called him out on his illegal activity. When you're in a situation where you don't have – and that's what so many people were so upset about. I don't want to rehash it, but it's the ability to have input in the workplace you work at. One of the challenges I still remember was arguing with whether we had enough safety equipment. Hmm. The union had to literally embarrass the city I worked for into purchasing bulletproof vests for its department. They didn't want to spend the money. But we had to go and embarrass them by going out and seeking contributions from the businesses to say, will you help supply the local police department with bullet-resistant vests, and they were. And once we started doing that, the city was embarrassed enough that they ponied up. But those are the kinds of issues. And that wasn't –
But you would have done that with or without a union, wouldn't you?
But it was the union – but being able to do it through the union does not allow – then we can't be retaliated against. And one of the things that was going on was people were being retaliated against for doing the right thing. And that was the irony, is by having union representatives and union lawyers, we went in front of the police and fire commission, and we won both of the – we had two very serious hearings where the police chief tried to fire two very good police officers for reasons that were completely invalid. And because we had a union representing those two officers, they were protected. And that's what it boils down to for a lot of people, is knowing, yeah, the vast majority of supervisors are decent people, but there are bad people out there. There are bad supervisors. There are people that will abuse the system. That's why you have the – and if you look at the history of what unions were for, and I always tell this to people, do you enjoy the 8-hour workday? Do you enjoy a 40-hour work week? Do you enjoy paid sick time, paid vacation, all those things? Where do you think they came from? They weren't just given away. Unions had to fight for those, and in Wisconsin, people died for those things.
I'm sure we can go
–
sides. Yeah. Both sides could go for hours, and we could use the whole show up. I wanted to talk about some of the more – recent, you know, towards the, sure. that 33-hour marathon push in the assembly, and one of the things that it seemed like both sides were kind of on the same page with was iron mining and as a way to get jobs, and all sides said that they were okay with the iron mining bill if it was done responsibly. And but when it came to changing mining regulations to suit Kogebic Taconite's wishes, that consensus kind of fell apart. Representative Bernier, why didn't the iron mining legislation pass? I mean, we don't want to throw blame out there, but what were some of the contributing factors?
I think for the most part there was misinformation. There was fear-mongering. And point blank, you know, Kathy Stepp, the secretary of the GNR, sent a memo out in regard to this. And I think she felt, too, that the DNR was accused of not being able to do their job. There was all kinds of misinformation out there, and there was just an unwillingness to bend. And whether that was to make, you know, Scott Walker have one less victory, I don't know. But I think that the Joint Finance Committee came back with some real sensible amendments to the bill and to make it better in the very same words that Senator Schultz and Senator Jouk wanted. And it just became a political, you know, potato. So that's essentially what happened. And there, now there are ramifications for that.
Right. And some of the ramifications, aside from the company pulling out, at least for the time being, was, of course, the recall elections that are trying to be waged against Senator Bob Jelk of Poplar and Senator Dale Schultz of Richland Center, I believe. Representative Dano, what about that?
Well, you know, I'll just point out, keep in mind the Republicans still had the majority in the state Senate, and if they had worked through with Senator Schultz, they could have passed a bill that Senator Schultz would have found workable. I mean, they had the majority. They could have done this. I mean, as an example, Scott Walker really didn't exercise a lot of leadership. He jetted around the state and kind of walked and said stuff, but he never went into the room with folks and said, let's hammer something out that can work. Mm. Instead, he just kind of ran around the state and
he did a lot of, he pushed it hard.
But he ran around. But part of it is you got to do the hard work and go into the room and come out with something that Senator Schultz and the other folks can live with. And that's what, to me, it was symbolic of the whole session, is if you try and jam down the most, if you look at the version that passed the assembly, it's pretty extreme. It was really, and the other thing about that bill, that if that would have passed, we would have been tied up in a federal lawsuit dealing with a lot of the Indian tribes up north. They would have filed lawsuits. It would have probably tied it up forever. If we could come up with a compromise that everybody would have bought into, we probably could have moved ahead. The other thing I did find ironic is there was nothing that said that Gogebic Taconite couldn't have just gone ahead and applied for a mining permit under existing laws. They had permits to do sampling and all sorts of things like that. There's a lot of us that think there's a little more to it than what Gogebic Taconite was talking about. And I suspect Senator Schultz recognized that as well, because he's made some later comments talking about how there are ferrous mineral deposits in other parts of the state as well, particularly southwestern Wisconsin. And I think he fully recognized that might have had some very potentially negative impacts on his own district, not just a fairly sparsely populated area up north. So I think there's that whole mining situation was an onion, and there's a lot more to it than a lot of people realize. I talked with mining experts and said, They felt that ore body was not an economically feasible ore body to mine because of the way it was, the angle of repose, as they say it. And I don't want to get too deep into it.
Basically meaning that they would have had to dig way down. It would have been
amounts of overburn would have had to have been removed relative to the amount of ore that could have been recovered. And so if you look at what's going on in Minnesota, those mines have a different angle. And those mines flicker on and off with economic activity right now, and those are already established mines. So there is more to this than what met the eye, and I think Senator Schultz recognized that.
Representative Bernier?
That is precisely my point. There's a lot of speculation that seems to be, you know, accusing of ulterior motives and that sort of thing.
Well, one of the speculations was that the company helped write the assembly version. Like, they wrote the bill. Is that true?
Well, first of all, this is a point that I wanted to make, and I can come. The tobacco legislation was written by a tobacco coalition organization.
Mm-hmm.
That happens all the time.
Lobbying is a part of
absolutely. There are. I can just about every organization, and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of them down in the southern part of the state mm-hmm. that all have sample legislation. And then they bring it in to Representative Dano or Representative Bernier, and they say, you know, what do you think of this legislation? You know, this is what we want, and we will look at it and say yes or no or whatever. And that is essentially – that's not unusual. And so I know everybody was kind of mum on the word, but that's not unusual. So, you know, they bring it forward, take a look at it, they tweak it, they sit on with Legislative Reference Bureau, who, you know, pens the legislation for us, the representatives, and then they began the public hearings. I know that the committee, the Jobs Committee, made a lot of changes, six or seven changes to the assembly version, and then Joint Finance made a lot of other changes. And I want to point out that the Department of Natural Resources was pretty offended by all of the accusations and speculation that had gone on. And Kathy Stepp wrote, and she said that this mining proposal would have had to garner DNR approval, Army Corps of Engineers, approval of the EPA, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So it's not a ramrod kind of thing. And I just think that all the speculation and the misinformation is part of the problem.
So you're saying there would have still been plenty of oversight?
Absolutely.
From all different levels.
If I could, Rich, real quickly.
Sure, Representative Dana.
You know, that letter that the secretary wrote was really unprecedented. A lot of people commented about that in Madison, how, you know, she really behaved. You know, once you become an agency administrator, you're supposed to kind of try and step away from partisanship.
It is a political appointment, though.
It is a political appointment, but your job is to be an agency administrator, and part of your job is to try and say, you know, we're going to try and step back from the politics and just administer this agency in a fair, effective way. And, you know, one of the things that she failed to point out in that letter is currently there is one person in the mining regulation section for the state of Wisconsin, one. It would have literally taken months just to gear that section up, just to analyze and to start doing a review of those kinds of mining regulations. She had no plan in place to even bring that mining section up to speed. And that you would have been literally pulling people from all over the agency and department. So, you know, I found that letter, quite frankly, a bit over the top. And a lot after my own heart. And a lot of us really thought that, you know, this is she didn't really it flies in the face of the way we're supposed to be running our agencies. And it goes back to why I've always supported making the Department of Natural Resources Secretary a non-political appointment, because you want somebody that's not a, for lack of a better term, a political hack running those kinds of departments.
And with that, for the last question I've got on this iron mining, the governor has said that he thinks there's a slim chance that the mining bill compromise can be reached, or that they'll be able to get the company back, even though they've already backed off. I think they've relinquished some of their exploratory drilling permits with the State Department of Natural Resources. And also recently, I think Senator Jelk had a meeting with the governor about this. I'll start with you, and I'll ask Representative Bernier as well. But Representative Dano, is there a chance that we can win Gogebic back?
I honestly don't know. I think that's entirely up to Gogebic Taconite, and
right.
I'm not privy to their thought process. I think
is there a chance for a compromise?
I certainly think we can work out an effective bill that would work. I mean, we do have a lot of mining going on in the state right now, and I have mining going on all over Trumplo and Buffalo County. I'm sure there's mining going on in now. It's not metallic mining, but
no,
it is mining.
It's non-metallic. Exactly.
But the point
is very, very different.
It's very different. But mm-hmm. the point is, we can do mining in the state of Wisconsin, and we can do it effectively. But we don't need to. We should not surrender, essentially, all the environmental protections that we have in place just for the sake of a single company. We don't write legislation for a single company. We write it for the state as a whole.
Representative Bernier, do you think there's a chance that something can be hammered out and we can get some iron mining up in northern Wisconsin or perhaps southwestern Wisconsin?
Yes, and the iron mining is significantly different, and I think that is why we were looking at changing. Matter of fact, I don't think it is. It is the reason why we were looking at changing iron mining bill law from the copper and other types of metallic mining, because there are chemicals used in the other type of mining, copper and silver, and there is not. They do not use
the sulfides,
chemicals, sulfites,
et cetera,
right?
Yeah.
So that is the reason for the difference, and that we had a company interested in copper mining in the state of Wisconsin, and it was drug out through the current mining bill, the mining laws, that we felt that was just not an effective way to get a company in here to start doing business.
And with that, we'll take a break here on the west side. We're talking about the 2011-2012 state legislative session with Representative Chris Dano and Representative Kathy Bernier of Chris Dano is from Trempealeau and Kathy Bernier is of Chippewa Falls. You're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We do have open phone lines, and now's your chance to get a question in directly to your local lawmakers. So give us a call at 800-228 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. We'll be right back. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Legislative Update on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're joined this hour by two state representatives who are filling us in on the final push of the 2011-2012 legislative session and politics in general in Wisconsin. We're joined by Republican freshman state representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls and Democratic state senator Chris Dano of Trempealeau. And to our list, state rep. What did I say? Oh, I said state senator. State Representative Chris Dano of Trempealeau. And to our listeners, what do you think of the this last historic legislative session? What did you think about the recalls? Give us a call with your questions or comments for the lawmakers. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. And before we go to the phones, let's talk a little bit about venture capital, and that was another major push by both sides. You know, the jobs. That's all we ever heard. And it was a major jobs agenda which failed to gain some traction, and that's venture capital. Basically, the way I understand it, it sounds like a loan to investment companies that would fund startup companies in small businesses in Wisconsin. Kathy Bernier, why wasn't this... Why couldn't we get a venture capital bill through the legislature?
Well, that is not my expertise, and I know that the representative from Green Bay, who kind of was the main man on Schneider National, is the person who was working on that.
Okay.
And there was, from what I understand, not an agreement that really could be reached between he and the governor. In addition, it would cost a lot of money. It would be a lot of taxpayer dollar investment. We have a lot of jobs bills that we have done. And I think, you know, I hate to create winners and losers with this credit and that credit and, you know, that sort of thing. So I would like to see what we've done, how well it's worked so far, and whether it's stimulating the economy with what the legislation that we passed currently, and not expand much more until we've, you know, take a look at how
tested the waters.
Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation is working, how the jobs tax credits are working, and the whole litany of other jobs credits and things that we've passed, and how they're working, and if they're working well or if they're not. So that's what I understand happened there.
Yeah, and the there was, of course, the WEDC was a big change in state government, and you know, creating this quasi public, quasi private organization to basically administer the creation of business in Wisconsin. And Chris Dano, what about the WEDC? Is that,
you know, I had real concerns about the oversight. I wanted it to be more transparent. My worry is, and this is what has happened in other states, that it ends up being the monies end up getting used for people that don't necessarily have the best ideas but are politically well connected. And I think that is my biggest concern. I would have liked to have seen much more transparency. We're talking about I think $70 million or so, at least the initial stages, really with very little public oversight. Essentially, you know, here it is, fellas, use it the best way we think you can with very little public oversight. And I found that troubling. I think you need to make sure these types of entities are very, very transparent in how the money is being spent and being used. That was my largest concern about the way they were doing it, was that there was not enough transparency. And I'm a big believer. Transparency is always good, you know, in the vast majority of cases. So I found it troubling. And if you look at Wisconsin, unfortunately, we have not been performing up to snuff economically if you compare us to the rest of the nation.
Well, there were 6 months where Democrats said it was, you know, job losses. And according to the reports It looked that way, but now it seems to be turning around a little bit. February was pretty good. March was all right.
But if you think about it, we're really 6 months behind. And that means a lot of jobs that potentially could have been created were. If you look at some of the numbers I've seen, if we would have just simply kept pace with what the national economic recovery was doing, we're about 34,000 jobs behind where that pace, if we would have simply kept pace with the national economic recovery. Yeah, Wisconsin will track along with the national economy. As the national economy has improved, Wisconsin is starting to get pulled along. But I think you can – what's clear to me is we're essentially starting well behind where we could have if not for some of the policies we pursued early in the session. Now, I'm sure my colleague will disagree with me on that, but I think it's pretty clear. I think if you look at when the governor's budget kicked in, it really started to turn south, and we really have not recovered fully from that yet.
Representative Bernier, I've heard that argument that when the budget came into effect that it started going south, the jobs numbers. But I've also heard that some are blaming it on the recalls and just the political instability in the state. What are your thoughts on that?
All of the beverage. You know, the state of Wisconsin, we didn't fall in as deep into the recession as a lot of the rest of the country did either, on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
And our unemployment wasn't as high as the national average either. So, you know, we kind of do our own thing here in the state of Wisconsin to a point. But I was at the Western Wisconsin Workforce Resource meeting in Chippewa at the Technical College, and the economist from the Department of Workforce Development discussed some of what's going on in our economy. And he said, yes, the state of Wisconsin right now, we're growing a bit, we're a little sluggish, but he said it's the trends that I look for. What do you think is most important, the Wisconsin trend or the national trend? And, of course, he said the national trend, and the national trend is picking up, and therefore Wisconsin will come along. You can only do so much in a national economy, state by state by state. So we are doing our best here to make a good work environment, business environment for businesses, for the growth in our homegrown businesses. But we're a product of our national economy as well.
Right, global economy even.
Yes, correct.
We're going to go to the phones right now. We've got Lynn calling from Eau Claire. And Lynn, you are on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I would like some clarification with right to work versus the collective bargaining provided by union protection. It seems to me that right to work gives business owners all the rights, i.e. to hire cheaply and fire at will. And why is this being presented as a benefit for the workers when it is clearly only business owners who benefit from right to work?
All right, and we'll put that one to Representative Dano, and then we'll get a response from Representative Bernier.
Well, I think the evidence shows that when you look at states that have right-to-work laws and those sorts of things, the average wages and benefits of the working people there are substantially lower than states that protect collective bargaining. Those are numbers you can't really argue with. I right-to-work probably is a classic example of branding of something that is not right-to-work is not what I would use. I would call it – it's called union busting is what it is. It's what it should be called, the union busting law. But that's what it is. And it's plain and simple. I think if you look at where those states that have right – like I said, if you look at states that have right-to-work laws in place, wages and benefits for working people aren't as good. And I think that's a big part of the reason.
And Representative Bernier, the right to work is the right whether or not to join a union. It's a it's basically a law that that gets rid of the mandatory joining of unions.
Right, it's not a closed shop. You have a right to join a union or not join a union. We haven't pursued the right to work. I haven't seen any legislation in regard to the state of Wisconsin becoming a right-to-work state.
Mm-hmm.
What we had concerns with is the public sector unionization and how that is affecting the taxpayers and when the private sector, you know, their business cycles, mm-hmm. And the wages fall, they lay off, they do, you know, it is more reactive to what business environment is in the state or in the community, and public sector is completely different the way I see it.
Rich, I'll make a prediction. If Governor Walker wins survives the recall election and wins, and if Republicans retain control of the Senate and the Assembly, we will see right-to-work legislation in Wisconsin next term. That's my prediction. Well, I hope it's not the case, but I'm going to predict that. I'm hoping that Democrats will regain control of all three of those places. But if Republicans are in control, I'd be willing to make a dinner bet with my colleague here that legislation will be introduced with a very good chance of passage.
A dinner bet. Is there a lot of gambling going on down in Madison? Because I remember hearing a situation where between Barca, Peter Barca and Robin Voss, that they owed one or the other owed each other quite a few dinners.
Well,
but anyway,
every once in a while. It's sweet. It makes the deal sweeter.
It sure does, depending on what you order. We're going to take our final break here. We are coming to the top of the hour for the West Side, but I want to get into one bill that really piqued my interest that passed was Senate Bill 504 relating to moratoriums. We'll get some comment on that from our representatives, and we'll also get into everything else that we can fit within 15 minutes. They do go by quickly. You're listening to the West Side here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the 2011-2012 legislative session this hour, and we're joined by State Representative Chris Dano of Trempealeau, a Democrat from Trempealeau, and State Representative Kathy Bernier, a Republican from Chippewa Falls. We've got open phone lines if you want to call in to get your question or comment directly to your local lawmaker. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. And we will take a quick call here before we get into the discussion about moratoriums and the state law that seems to restrict that. We're going to go to Dunn County, and Terry is on the line. Terry, thanks for calling in. What's your question or comment?
Thank you, Red. My comment is on the, quote, last 33 hours of the session, the legislature session. And I even watched and followed some of that on Wisconsin Eye pertaining to picking on the Milwaukee Area Technical College District and reorganizing the board. I really have a solution for that. If they want to pick on tech college districts, my solution is why don't you fund it the same way you fund the UW system? And funded at the state level, then you can do anything you want up there, and you can stay within expenses. The current funding of the tech college system in the greatest recession since the Depression, what are you giving to the seniors living on fixed incomes and trying to stay in their home? We just saw a current proposal go in the Fox Valley Technical College where they're going to spend $66.5 million. And I'd like to know who's going to foot the bill for that. I think I have the answer. Madison Area Technical College 2 years ago spent another 66 point something million. And I'd like to know who's funding the bill for that. So I think it's really time that the legislature is responsible. And just like the UW system, you fund it at the state level and leave it off my back.
All right, Terry, thanks so much for the call. And we'll put that one to Representative Bernier. Do you see a change in the way it's funded? These tech colleges that rely heavily on property taxes.
Yeah, I understand, Terry, just where you're coming from there. That has been something that I've discussed since I started running. Just a year and a half ago, that we fund K-12 plus technical colleges on the property tax. And that is difficult for older people who have worked all their lives for a really nice home, and their property taxes go up and up and up, and they're living off of their retirement, and that isn't growing. So I have a concern about that, and I have discussed that. I know technical college presidents don't like the idea of not being able to go to the property taxpayers, but I think we should look at funding our education, whether K through 12 or our technical colleges, in a different manner. And I think that would help with controlling property taxes.
Representative Dano.
Well, keep in mind, the technical colleges are funded through a mix. There is a property tax. They also do receive funding from the state, and they also, of course, collect tuition from students. Mm-hmm. Now, part of the problem is the state cut 30% of its funding, the state revenues that are supposed to go back to the technical college, 30% of that was cut. Now, the argument being made that you know, technical colleges are somehow a luxury, I can say is probably, if we want economic growth in this state, one of the best things we can do is to have a solid technical college program, because those programs directly feed into needed jobs. One of the problems we do have is we do have a skill mismatch in the state. There are a lot of employers that are saying we have jobs out there, but we don't have folks that have the proper technical training for them. That's what we need to do, is in order to get those folks into those technical colleges, feed them back into the system. And the technical colleges do a good job in most local areas of working with local businesses and saying, what are your needs? Do you need welders? Do you need nurses? Do you need what kind of technical education do you need? And then we can train them and provide them essentially is to feed into your local country, your company, and your economy. That is why the technical college system is so critical to our state. If you look at what Jeff Immelt, who's the president of GE, said when he talked about what are the things you need for good, solid economic development, you need a great K-12 system. You need a technical college system. You need a university system. You need a modern transportation infrastructure. Those are the keys to economic development in any place around the world. Tax incentives and all those things don't mean much anymore. And those are the things that are critical. And unfortunately, if you look at what we've done in Wisconsin, all those things we've hammered back pretty hard.
I wanted to talk about this Senate Bill 504, which I can't remember which Wisconsin act it is. It's been signed into law. But it puts some restrictions on enacting moratoriums, and that piqued my interest because one of the things I report on most in western Wisconsin is the sand mining, mm-hmm. Frac sand mining industry. And this bill seems to tell – or it puts some caveats on how a county goes about enacting a moratorium, not just for sand mining but for anything. And I even did a story on it. I asked some questions of the lawmakers that were authoring it and pushing it, mostly from southeastern Wisconsin. But they said it had nothing to do with sand mining. Representative Bernier, what do you think of this moratorium bill or law?
I am aware of it, and we did question it. And as a matter of fact, as I recall, an amendment was put on it to exclude the sand mining for these restrictions. But it makes it clear, excuse me, to local governments that you have to have kind of a mission or a purpose for having a moratorium. I mean, there has to be clear reason to have a moratorium. You don't have a moratorium strictly to stop whatever is happening. You have a moratorium to hold what is happening and to determine whether zoning regulations or some permitting is needed, or some reason for that, whether the infrastructure will handle whatever is being proposed. So it gives some clear direction as to how long the moratorium can be and for what purpose.
Representative
Dino. This is where I disagree with my colleague. I mean, and one of the things we have a great discussion about at the Capitol is, you know, are you for local control or are you not? And the Republican Party has made great claims as to being for local control. And I often would get up on the floor and we'd have bills like this and say, yeah, you like local control, except when you disagree with what the local folks decide, if it's something that you don't agree with. And as an example, I have to look at my own district. We have a lot of sand mining that's coming in. Buffalo County is one of those areas. And as an example, Buffalo County just lost its zoning administrator and land use administrator.
Right.
And they got hired by the sand mining companies.
yeah,
you know,
interesting.
And what they're looking at doing is, because, look, all of a sudden we're left without our guy that does the permitting and the analysis. We need to put a moratorium in place, because otherwise we're going to be overwhelmed. And I don't think it's at all unreasonable for a county to say, look, all of, especially when you look at what's happened with the sand mining issue. There's nothing wrong with saying we need to slow this down, have a look at things, and make sure we have our ducks all in a row, because this thing blew up very quickly out of nowhere. And counties and local governments should have the ability to say, you know what, we got to put the brakes on. It's not permanent, but we need to step back, make sure we have the necessary ordinances in place. We have personnel needs that may need to be met, all those kinds of things, and give local governments that ability. And I think if you look at the session, there's been, again, an overall approach that says, no, we're because some special interests now. And one of the things I think is a big part of it. It's easier for special interests to play in Madison than it is at the local government level, simply because, and I learned this very quickly, special interests can come down to Madison and pass out a lot of campaign checks and hand out a lot of money to various committees. They can have more influence, and it's easier to do that at the Madison level and get a bill passed than it is to try and steamroll into a county where everybody knows each other and you can't get away with some of those kinds of shenanigans because people smell it out, sniff it out pretty quickly. And that's why a lot of what happens in Madison. It's because the big boys figure it's easier to go down to Madison, just get a law passed, jam it through a committee, hand out some campaign cash, and get it done. And that, unfortunately, that goes on a lot, and you saw it with a number of industries, and it happens all the time. And it's incumbent on those of us who represent local interests to say, you know what, sorry, fellas, no.
Right, it happens all the time, and I think a lot of people are a little upset, you know, that happens. But at this point, it is.
Well, there's a simple solution, and it's to get a handle on campaign financing. And again, there has been no willingness to do that. I find the way the system works to be extraordinarily frustrating. I think it's akin to legalized bribery. But, you know, this is where the public needs to step forward, though, and I think the general public has not made campaign finance enough of an issue. They really need to make it more of an issue.
And since we're on the topic, Representative Bernier, campaign finance, do you think there needs to be some changes? There was some changes that the Wisconsin Democracy campaign was pretty upset about that I believe it kind of changed the way that people have to report who they are and when they make donations.
Under $500, you don't have to report your employer. Was that the suggested?
Like that.
I don't think that passed, actually.
Okay. Would you like to see some legislation to tighten up campaign finance?
You know, we also have to follow what the Supreme Court has said is legal.
Citizens
far as that,
United.
Yes. As well, you know, what is federal law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing people don't understand, we can't take checks from corporations. We cannot take checks from unions. You know, some people think we can, but we can't. They don't even know the rules now. And, you know, you make things sound so bleak, Chris. I mean, honest to God, like we're all being bribed. It's not true. I want to say it right now. That is not true. We have to write down every contribution and have a report to the Governmental Accountability Board. We have the strictest campaign and ethics laws in the state of Wisconsin than almost any state in the country. So to make it sound like we're all in the pockets of corrupt people, I want to go on record right here that is not true, and I am not. So
well, the fundamental problem, though, is the party, you know, the leadership solicits funds from folks, and if you want clean, and I tell people this, if you want to clean up the political system, you're going to have to find a way to get more transparency on the money and to really drive as much of the money, at least make it transparent, more transparent, particularly with third party financing. And I could, that's a whole separate issue in many
sure
ways.
Is.
But fundamentally, if you want, I think that to me, and that was what frustrated me. We eliminated the public financing funds for the state
yeah,
elections. That
right.
was completely eliminated, basically to pay for voter ID. But you make it very difficult for a lot of average people to run for office simply because they can't raise money. I was lucky and in a position where the way my job situation worked out, I was able to do it. But if it was a little bit different, I wouldn't have been able to. It's a frustrating system, and people need to do something.
All right. Finally, I want to talk about redistricting, and that was a another big accomplishment by the Republicans. Got the maps that were more, and every side does it. Every party does it. that they put maps out that favor their party. But now a panel of federal judges is going to be redrawing two of the districts that are in Milwaukee, I believe.
Correct.
But, Christina, I wanted to ask you, I looked at the maps, and the 91st Assembly District is going to be in Eau Claire now. And you would be running against Mark Radcliffe in if you were to stay.
Well, I'll be the what's happened is
Radcliffe has decided he's not going to run. And right. Do you think that the redistricting played a part?
Oh, he said it did, and I talked to him about it. You know, that was what's so frustrating. Mark's a good friend of mine, and I'm going to miss him. And I didn't look forward to having to potentially run against him in a primary.
Right. We are getting close to the top of the hour. But what do you think about the
I think redistricting should be done by a nonpartisan board like they do in Iowa.
Okay.
Chris, we agree.
I'll work with you on the bill next session.
We agree.
I agree. I think it would be helpful to have a nonpartisan and I think involving the official organizations of the counties and the municipalities and the towns along with the state representatives, and we could have a pretty nice map drawn.
There you have it. I'd like to thank my guests this hour, Democratic State Representative Chris Dano of Trempolo and Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls. Thank you both so much for being with us. Also, a big thanks to Team West Side. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking about a controversial wind project in Forest, Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week.